Welcome, listeners, to the Wine About History podcast. I'm your host, Max Hamill, and today we're talking about Chevalier Saint-Georges, also known as Joseph Boulogne Saint-Georges. He was a very, very famous man of his time. And today we are drinking Cooper and Thief wine. I personally like it. It's a little expensive. I'll probably get it again. But it's more of a once in a while. It has a lot of flavors of dark chocolate, and overall it's a good wine. Not what I was expecting, though. So, back to Le Chevalier Saint-Georges. He was born in 1745. This is why I wanted to cover him, because he was a really interesting, amazing guy. He was one of those people that you almost can't believe existed. So, not only was his mother was a slave, had a lot of bigotry against him growing up. He was a championship fencer, one of the best fencers in the world. He was a soldier. He was a composer, violinist, athlete. He did all these amazing things, all while living in a time and place where he was very hated for the color of his skin. So let's go to his beginning. His father, George, was a wealthy plantation owner that had a 250-acre plantation. And he had 60 slaves, and one of them was called Anne, but her nickname was Nanon. And he fell in love with Nanon. It didn't matter that George was already married. Back then, you found your love, and for many time periods, you found your love outside of marriage. Marriage was not about love. So they began a relationship, Nanon and George, and they had a son on Christmas Day in 1745. Now, French law made it impossible for Joseph to inherit his father's ranks and titles. And George de Boulogne killed a man in a drunken duel not that long after. So they had to flee the Caribbean. The family had connections with the French king, Louis, and they got him a pardon. So he moved to France, to Paris specifically, and he loved his son, George. Joseph received lessons in music and fencing, mostly, those two skills would dominate his life. And those were the pursuits of an aristocrat at the time. And they lived in Paris, and George became the personal servant to the king, a very high honor. It was sort of probably a way for him to thank the king for getting him the pardon. So at 13, Joseph started going to this fencing academy of Nicolas Tessier de la Boussade. Can't pronounce that one. If I get any pronunciations wrong, please write into the Twitter page and tell me what I did incorrectly. So the fencing academy of Nicolas Tessier de la Boussière was an elite boarding school for the nobility and the aristocrats. And they covered everything from math to fencing to art to tactics, anything the nobility needed to study. And the nobility needed to study everything to be a class which could support the nation, which is what they were designed to do. And that in the 17th century, in the 18th century, that began to fall apart. So Joseph became friends of the La Boissière family because Joseph was he had to become an amazing human being to survive because of the color of his skin. Their son, the La Boissière family's son, said that he was the most amazing man. Joseph was the most amazing man he'd ever seen. So he bought his rank, Le Chevalier, you could do back then. He bought it in 1763. He purchased specifically l'officier de écuyer, conseiller de roi, contrôleur ordinaire de guerre, or the cavalry officer of cavalry, advisor to the king, and controller ordinary of wars. My French is off. So a lot of people keep pointing out in his life that he, because he was half black, half French, he keeps overcoming these racial barriers, and he keeps doing it because you just couldn't stop him. He was an amazing human being. And here's a quote. It is undeniable that he was gifted, but his inborn talents were magnified by relentless effort, permitting him not only to be better, but above all, to overcome the racial barriers which put him in the disdained social class of mulattoes, because his father was white and his mother was black. So what we know about his family life is that his father loved him and his mother. You know, a lot of he took care of them. He left them money. He left them everything he could, as far as we know. So his fencing ability was incredible. He was one of the best fencers of his time. He was, to this day, people bring him up. He acquired a position basically of invulnerability. And because of that, and that's not just physical. So fencing was such a social activity that he was basically a celebrity. And he did something very, very peculiar at the time, but it turned him to be undefeatable. You've probably heard the phrase, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. So what he would do for hours would put three dots on the wall and slowly, slowly lunge and tap them. People thought he was crazy, but he slowly did this for hours and hours, slowly touched them. And that's why he's undefeatable, is because he practiced this slow movement and ground it into his brain versus doing it rushed and hurriedly as fast as he could while he practiced. I fenced a little bit in college. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not as easy as it looks. It's very much an art form, and it's also a lot of fun. He was an athlete. He would be swimming in the sand with only one arm, and he just was better at everything because he wanted it so badly. He was an excellent pistol shot. He was an excellent runner. And all this kind of garnered his legend. So two famous duels that can set up his reputation were Picard and Faldoni. When he was 19, Joseph's father offered him an English horse and two-wheel carriage, which was the fashion at the time. But the offer had a catch. Joseph had to defeat a famous fencing master named Picard. Joseph soundly beat Picard and won the carriage. Gian Fodoni, which was the next famous duel, was a very famous Italian fencer. He came to duel Joseph. Joseph made him duel all the best duelists in Paris to prove himself, kind of like in a movie or something. The duel took place in public, and the royal court attended. Fodoni won 4-2, and that was his first real defeat, and Joseph took the loss very hard. He was also an expert at playing the violin and the harpsichord, and he rose to the ranks of music and became the music director of Paris d'Opéra. But there were some problems with that because he proposed a reorganization which caused dissent and got him kicked out. So a professor named Rib stated that St. George was at his peak as a composer in 1778. The next year he played for the Queen and her family at Versailles. So imagine that. He is the son of a slave and an aristocrat, and he's playing for the Queen and her family at Versailles. That's what you get when you have effort, and maximize your strengths. The next famous duel was Le Chevalier d'Eon. So the Prince of Wales set up a duel between Saint-Georges and a French woman named Le Chevalier d'Eon, who was in fact a cross-dressing spy for the King of France. His real name was Charles d'Eon de Beaumont, who served the King of France by dressing up, as we just said. Joseph won the match despite being 42 and his opponent was 59, and he wrote a piece called The Girl Boy 4 months after the match. There's actually a painting of the match, and it looks like it was a very tough duel. So when the French Revolution came around, he became a captain in the French National Guard on the revolutionary side, despite his being a personal guest of the king. He wanted people to be equal specifically because of his ethnic background. He led a legion of 800 infantry and 200 cavalrymen. He was its colonel, and he chose Alexandre Dumas to be his lieutenant colonel. Yes, that Alexandre Dumas who wrote the Count of Monte Cristo. He held off Austrian forces when they laid siege to Lille, I believe it's called, the town he was guarding. St. George was supposedly one of the first to fight and win the battle, and they overcame the siege. He also prevented General Dumouriez from betraying the revolution. There's a whole big story about this. Basically, they were going to try and get the nephew of the old king, and Austrian forces were going to take the nephew of the king and make him the new king of France, and that would have given the royalists more legitimacy. So after the revolution, he kind of fell from grace. Because of his ties with the aristocracy, on November 4th, 1793, he was arrested, imprisoned without a trial, which was very common back then. The Reign of Terror, it was called. And it was after a revolution, you need to be very careful how you go about things. Otherwise, you know, you look at revolutions over and over and over and over and over again, and it's just bloody chaos if someone doesn't step in and say, no, we're going to be adults, and we're going to obey the law, and we're going to do this carefully, which is what happened to our revolution. But it doesn't happen to a lot of others. So Robespierre, the famous dictator of the Reign of Terror, he was overthrown. And a lot of people were freed. A lot of people thought that things were going to get better. And Joseph was free on October 23rd, 1794. So he was in their prison for nearly a year. He wrote one more opera called The Circle of Harmony. And that was about it. Towards the end of his life, he became ill from an untreated bladder infection. And an old friend and soldier-in-arms named Nicholas Duhamel treated him, took him in, and cared for his friend until his death on June 10th, 1799. So that's his life. And this is a man I've always respected. I heard about him while taking fencing classes many years ago. And he has always fascinated me by one of those people who could have thrown up his hands and said, you know what, I'm the son of an aristocrat, I'll just be fat and bored and I'll just have people peel me grapes. Instead, he tested himself and became one of the most fascinating characters in history. Reinvented fencing. I've listened to his music. The music is good. He's actually earned the nickname the Black Mozart, which I don't think is fair to him. I think he was on his own. You think he was equal to Mozart in his own way. I'll probably get butchered for saying that, but you know what? If you listen to St. George's work, it's really good. I recommend his violin work and his harpsichord because he was a master of those specifically. I'm not authority on classical music. I just listen to it on the way to work. So he put all this effort in. And it's a sad thing he died the way he did because, you know, that's what happens when governments go crazy. It's what happens when the cancer of superstition and fear and maybe not superstition, but the cancer of paranoia takes over. It can completely destroy a country and more lives than one. Still, he had an amazing life. He was an amazing athlete, and he's still remembered to this day. So, next, we are going to cover the real Saint Nicholas, who was a Greek saint, and he's famous for more than one thing, everything from punching someone out to the Council of Nicaea to leaving gold by people's chimneys. So we're going to cover him next. Remember, we thank you all for listening, and remember, without history, you wouldn't be here.